Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Fill her up!
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Conceive, believe, achieve. Shut the fuck up.
This is Believe You Me on the Gas Digital Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. It is Monday evening in California. I don't know where you are in the world, but wherever you are, I hope you are happy. It's another episode of the Believe You Me podcast. And today's co-host is none other than my very good friend, UFC light heavyweight contender, the one, the only, Anthony Lionheart Smith. I mean, Anthony, come on. Come on, what an introduction. How are you, buddy?
That was a fantastic introduction. I'm feeling fancy around this goddamn place.
Oh, how was your weekend, mate? How's everything?
It was good. It was good, man. A lot of kids basketball and sports and stuff. So just running around doing the I'm a professional chauffeur right now.
Yeah, that's how it is, isn't it? You know, you try and be a father, and that's what it turns into, just driving people around.
I can't wait till these things can drive.
Little bastards, get a job. Get a job, get a car, get out the house. How was your Christmas before we get into everything?
Yeah, it was good. It was good. Normally we travel. We kind of just pick a place and just go. We got a real small family. So usually just me and my wife and my kids find somewhere to go. But, we got a 12-week-old baby and a new house.
Oh, you do?
So, yeah. We had a baby recently.
Oh, I had no idea, Anthony. Oh, my congratulations. Boy, girl, name?
Another girl. That's four girls.
Get out of town.
Yeah, that's four girls. So her name's Alani. She's doing fantastic. So, we just stayed home, enjoyed the new house, enjoyed the new baby, and stayed close.
That sounds beautiful. So I've got to ask then. I mean, having four girls, does the desire for a boy burn strongly in your heart? And would you go for a fifth to try and make that happen?
No, I think four is probably
four's
the number.
A lot. Man.
Four is a lot of kids. I think it's the perfect number for us. So I got the vasectomy scheduled already. I'm out.
Oh, good for you.
I'm retired. Yeah, I'm retired.
Yeah, no, because my dad had, we had three boys and they wanted a girl. And then they had twins. They had one of each. So you got to be careful. You never know what you're looking at.
That's tough.
Yeah. No, I might get the vasectomy. Does it hurt?
They say that it's not that bad. I mean, I'll let you know here in a few weeks, but
they
say it's not bad and there's not a lot of risk with it. And I think if it's a little bit painful for a few days, I think that's better than being nervous about having a fifth kid when you're not ready. You know, if you're okay with having another kid and you're like, whatever, we all know how that happens, but, I think four is the number, and we can start just focusing on the ones.
Well, no, four is a lot of children, regardless. You know what I mean? You don't need five. Do you know what I mean? I mean, I get it. My brother has three girls, and they have an amazing time. So four. The only problem is that when they get older, you're going to be bullied in your own house.
I already am. They don't give a shit about me, man. No one ever says that part about being a dad. You know, it's all the responsibility and how expensive it is and weddings and college.
Everything that you want comes second. You know what I mean?
Like
the house is always going to be hot as fuck. That's a given. You know, my house is boiling. They will never put the air conditioning on. And Callum, he's left. I say this a lot, but Lucas, he might as well be a girl because he's such a mummy's boy. And he agrees with everything she says and disagrees with everything that I say. And then, of course, I've got my daughter, Ellie. So I'm surrounded by two women and a little bitch of a son. So between them all, I might as well be the only man in the house.
Well, I got one of them on my side. But she's only four, so she's like her opinion doesn't matter at all right now. She has no say in anything. She's team dad for sure, but she's not quite big enough yet. She's probably the toughest out of all of them, though.
Do you know what? This is a bit depressing, but you're talking about family and then you're talking about hospitals and surgeries. My mom, and I got to give my mom a shout out. She's in hospital right now. I got a terrifying text yesterday. I got a text. Your mom's in hospital. She's not well. We don't know what's going on, yada, yada, yada. But she had appendicitis. She had her appendix out, but she's old and I was worried. But all night long, I wasn't sure what it was going to be. You never know if it's going to be cancer or whatever and all the rest of it. And then this morning, they said appendicitis. So I Googled it and the appendix... They don't even know what the appendix is for.
Yeah, apparently, you don't need it.
Yeah, you don't even need it. I'm like, well, what the fuck's it doing there in the first place?
Yeah, I know it. Well, out of all the things that it could have been, I think that's that's a fairly decent one to deal with. So I hope that all works out, man. I'm
sorry. No, she'll be fine. She's tough as all boots. She's fathered us, mothered, should I say, 6 Bispings. But you know, she's not in the best health. She smoked her entire life. Do you know what I mean? You know, like the old school generation. So you're like, and even though she's not a drinker, anytime I say to my mom, I say, Mom, would you like a glass of wine? She goes, oh, yeah, just pour me a wee one. Do you know what I mean? But she wants it. And every time you ask her, it's always, pour me a wee one, just a wee one. You say, Mom, you don't have to say a wee one, okay? You're having a fucking full glass and you know you are. But rest up, Mom. Hope you're well. Harrington, show yourself on the screen, please.
What's going on, guys? Oh, how you doing?
What's up? You
got a shirt on.
Yeah, man. Devil's on the baby.
Last time, 5 minutes ago, he was. He was almost shirtless, right? a couple of episodes ago, he had this vest on where there was a lot of flesh on display. And today, there was a lot of flesh on display. And then I said, you know what? I'm not going to tell you how to dress, but it's a little off-putting.
Yeah, I mean, no, it's a real issue when there's literally two, you know, professional fighters who get paid to get down in their underwear and look really great on TV. And
we don't get paid to get down in our underwear, okay? That is a sentence that can be taken out of context.
Well, I mean, you know, I watch enough weigh-in videos. I understand that's where the show money comes from.
With the weigh-in videos.
What?
So you're paying for it.
No, well, yeah, I mean, I don't know, with pay-per-view dollars and attendance. But, I mean, the point I'm making is I can't be the one to be showing the most skin here. Listen, would be absolutely insane.
If you're asking Anthony if he has an OnlyFans, just come out and ask him. Just be direct that you want to subscribe.
I was having this conversation with my wife the other day, and she cracks some OnlyFans joke. And I'm like, listen, we should just start one. just me snapping random, ridiculous pictures of my everyday life and see how much money I can make on OnlyFans, just my everyday life.
Listen, well, you know, you work on the commentary team in the Apex. They're always talking about it because there's a few ladies around the UFC circles that shall remain nameless. They're making lots of money on fucking OnlyFans. Like, all right, fuck it, I don't care. Apparently Brittany Palmer, right, just takes pictures of her feet and she makes like 20, 30 grand a month just showing pictures of her feet on OnlyFans.
If I could do that, I totally would. In a heart, like if there was some market out there for feet pictures of Anthony Smith, I would sell that shit so fast.
100%. I'm telling you, no one's gonna pay for my feet though. My feet are the most disgusting part of my body. If there was one part of your body, Harrington, which would it be? You think that would get people to subscribe to OnlyFans? Same question to you as well, Mr. Smith.
Yep. I mean, for me, it's the beard for sure. That's the only thing I got going for me.
Well, it ain't your penis.
All right. Well,
I feel like I just post like ass pictures. I think I got a nice butt for a guy.
Oh, look at that. Hey, nothing wrong with a bit of confidence.
That's what I'm hoping for.
You're a professional fucking athlete. You should have a decent ass. I would have. Harrington, has Anthony got a nice ass?
So here's the thing. I do actually have a theory.
Here's the thing. I've been studying your backside for quite some time. Sorry, go on.
I'm telling you right now, fighters who have the bigger butts, I'm telling you, there's something about it. They, A, can get more power behind their punches, and they can take a bigger shot, right? The same thing goes for NFL tight ends. Big butt tight ends, those guys play forever.
It's the posterior chain, and it really is, though. It is. That's where all the power is generated. Like Callum, my son, poor thing, he cannot buy a pair of jeans to fit him. Do you know what I mean? Because his ass and his thighs are just fucking gigantic. And even if you get, like, baggy jeans, the top end is far. It's like, bless him, he looks like a girl trying to show her ass off.
Callum's got to go shop at Apple Bottom Jeans.
Yeah, something like that. I don't know what that is. I've never been. Anyway, we used to do a lot of non-MMA stories at the top of the show. And then for whatever reason, we kind of stopped doing that. So now we're going back. It's 2022. We like the funny stories. And of course, there's no fucking MMA happening right now anyway. So we're going to talk about some nonsense. Sadly, I will say this, Anthony, we left it to Harrington to compile what these non-MMA stories are going to be. Okay. So, and ladies and gentlemen watching, the viewers, the audience, the believers, disclaimer, Harrington compiled this list. So Harrington, what have you got?
Okay. So here's the thing. Of the top three stories, two of them are downright sad. And one of them is a pretty interesting question from Twitter. So you tell me which one you guys want to go to first.
We'll ask Anthony. He's the guest co-host.
Anthony,
let's just wreck it right away. Let's go sad stories.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, we want to get super fucking depressed to start off the new year. Let's go.
All right. Well, in memoriam, RIP to America's dad for quite some time there, Bob Saget, famed Full House dad and stand-up comedian, dead at 65 in an Orlando hotel room. RIP. Gentlemen, discuss your favorite Bob Saget memories.
Well, disclaimer, I don't know who Bob Saget is. I do know today, because I watched the news when I'm having my coffee, and I saw it. It was all over the news. Bob Saget's dead. On Instagram last night, I forget who it was, sharing that Bob Saget had died. Another comedian saying, you know, RIP, whatever. So, and Bob Saget was tagged. So I clicked on his profile, excuse me. And the sad thing was, apparently, well, not apparently, he posted yesterday. He was in Florida, I think, for a stand-up show, and he looked all fine. I mean, I didn't watch Full House. I don't think it made it over to the UK. Do you know what I mean? So I'm not familiar. But the guy was just posting yesterday on Instagram, and here he is dead, which is very, very sad. Anthony Smith, favorite Bob Saget moment.
Yeah, that's insane. My favorite Bob Saget, obviously, I grew up watching Full House. He's just, you know, that's America's dad. And he was just,
is that like, who he was? He was the dad.
Yeah, he was the dad. So he was just like the nice on the show. He was like super clean cut, very nice, you know, kind of, he was the one that people kind of just made fun of. He was kind of silly. And I would say my favorite moment was when I watched like one of his stand-up comedy specials, and he was the dirtiest, most foul-mouthed comic I'd ever seen. And I was like, I cannot believe this is the dad from Full House. It was like just a total 180. And I was fascinated by it because it was the total polar opposite of who he actually was or who he was on the show. And then immediately, you know, he's saying fuck every other word and talking about sex. And I was like, holy shit, this is crazy.
Yeah, it is wild.
I was a big fan of his stand-up after that just because it was the polar opposite of his career.
Yeah, I saw a little feature from him this morning on one of the news channels. And I even said to my wife, I said, oh, bless him. He said he seems like a really, really lovely person and obviously a very funny comedian. You know, he's not the only one that died. America's sweetheart, Betty White. And I am familiar with Golden Girls because my mom, again, God rest her. Well, she's not dead. What am I saying? God rest her soul. Get well, mom. She's not fucking dead, but she loved Golden Girls. So I had to watch that all the time. So Betty White, she died. And I know America seems to be in mourning, but this is controversial. But I have a different take. I'm sorry. I am not going to get her. It's a shame. She seemed like a lovely woman and a great activist and a very, very nice person. But the reality is that people die, and she was 100 years old or not, like a day before her 100th birthday. You know what I mean? It's a real sad, you know, bless her. But she lived a wonderful fucking life and she made it to 100 years old. That's not bad. I'm 42. I don't think I've got long left on this planet, let alone another 57 fucking years.
Yeah, that's a long time. I'm not so much... I guess I'm with you on part of it. It's like she lived 99 goddamn years. That's a long time. A lot of people don't live 99 years. There's not a lot to complain about there. She lived a fantastic life. She's rich as fuck.
Yeah.
Did a lot of cool shit. Super nice. Did a lot of good things in the world. It just sucks. She was so close to 100. Like that's like a mile marker that nobody gets to. So it's just, it was like 17 days or something. It was so close. And she had big party planned.
There was a thing on the local news. I hate it, but I still watch this channel, KTLA5. It's utter fucking dog shit. But they did a whole thing on Betty White turning 100. Oh, she's going to be 100 soon and blah, 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 blah. Yeah. And then she fucking croaked. Do you know what I mean?
She posted on Instagram the day before she died too.
Did she?
Talking about how excited she was for her celebration, like for her 100, you know, her 100th birthday celebration. So. So that just kind of sucks because it was like she was cool and then not cool and then not okay.
This is supposed to be a fun non-MMA. We're gonna have a laugh here. We're talking about people dying. My mom's in the hospital. Brian's on screen.
What's the difference between Paul Walker and Betty White?
Oh God, listen, I'm friends with Vin Diesel. This better not be fucking offensive. I don't need family coming after me. Okay, what's the difference between Paul Walker and Betty White? Well, Betty White's a woman. I'll start with that, Anthony, your answer.
Oh, I'm so afraid of what the actual joke is. I don't even know what to say.
Paul Walker for sure hit 100.
Oh God. It's bad, but I like it, Brian. Oh dear.
I'm gonna use it, but it's really bad.
For sure hit 100. Oh my God, it's actually pretty good. I like it. Oh my God.
It's not as bad as I was expecting.
How did Bob Saget die? Because I haven't seen, because I don't know why. I didn't even know who the guy was, but I did go down the rabbit hole last night trying to find out because I was curious. You see a guy, he was 65 and he seemed like he was healthy. He's posting on Instagram and then the next day he's dead. But I didn't see an actual report as to how he died.
I don't think it's out yet. I read something just scrolling through social media earlier that it could take a couple weeks. So they did say there was no foul play suspected and no drug overdose suspected.
Okay.
So, which is good. That's kind of the scary thing. Like you expect if there's no foul play, it's a celebrity or you're hoping it's not an overdose or something crazy, like just got out of hand with some drugs or something. But one report I read just said that
fingers crossed.
Drugs. Yeah.
Fingers crossed. Harrington, can we move on now to maybe something that's like a little less fucking depressing than people dying? I mean, Betty White, Bob Saget, my mum, these are cherished people to me. Okay.
And the next thing is that mountain falling on a boat.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Did you see that in Brazil? Holy shit. Brian, tell me you've got a video for this. Did you see this, Anthony?
Yeah, I seen it on Derek Lewis posted it on his Instagram. That's where I seen it. Oh, man. Oh,
there we go. I mean, that's I did also. The first place I saw it was on Derek Lewis's Instagram. Never mind TMZ. Derek Lewis's only.
That's where I get my news.
And I saw fuck CNN. Derek Lewis, the blackbeast.com. That will bring up a very different website, I'm sure. maybe that guy with his legs open with a massive dong. I'm sure. You know
that guy died too.
Get the fuck out of it. Yeah. Oh, big dick brontosaurus died. He's fucking passed. This is a sad day. The man with the largest penis on the planet.
Big Dick Brontosaurus.
There's today's episode title.
I sent that meme to someone, and I used to send it all the time to people. And then my boxing coach, Danny, used to get people with it all the time.
Yeah.
And he was like, man, that guy passed away. Like, oh, shit. Sad.
What, too much blood flow to the penis?
No, enough to his brain.
Yeah. No. Because it's always, I've been got with that so many times. Like, you know, here, you check this out and you click on it and it's that. And you're like, oh, come on. But it did the round so many times. What was I talking about? Yeah, I saw it on Derek Lewis's thing. And I looked at it and I thought, fortunately, doesn't look like anyone died. But apparently 6 people died. What a way to go. I mean, talk about fucking terrifying.
Man, we do a lot of, like in the summertime, we're riding razors and stuff. We do a lot of boating and we'll find, like in South Dakota, there's a couple really, really good cliffs to like cliff jump off of that look kind of similar to that. And so that was the first thing I thought, like, man, how easy that could all go really bad, and there's always people at the bottom. Like when you jump in, they want to make sure that you didn't sometimes you bring your arms out too far when you hit the water and I've seen people dislocate their shoulders going into the water like that. So the boats kind of stay close in case they need to jump in and help you. And that could very easily happen in a lot of places. It's really sad.
No, I know it is really sad. And I thought the same thing when I was looking at that, because that stuff does happen. Do you know what I mean? Cliffs fall away, weather, rain, waves, everything. It corrodes shit away. I don't think that normally happens very frequently, but it makes me not want to be near the edge of a fucking cliff, whether either standing on the cliff or in the water ever again, because Jesus Christ. Oh, man, Mother Nature. It's a terrifying beast.
Yeah, they all had looked like they were having a lot of fun too. That's the shit. I mean,
oh yeah.
I've never even considered that happening, and I've been in a lot of places that look really similar to that.
You're on the
never
water.
Even thought about it, They've had a couple really nice boats out there. Everyone's probably having a blast. Some cold
water's
drinks.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it's probably hotter than shit. Man, that sucks.
Yeah, poor guy. Harrington, really depressing. Thank you very much. And what have we got next? Have we got a bunch of children dying in car crashes or anything like that? What else have we got?
No, this one I think is kind of interesting, and it's from the believers. You threw out their topics that they would like to hear the pair of you guys talk about, and one person wrote in that space tourism is becoming a pretty popular fad now. They were wondering if you guys were interested in doing it, and what the deal is with it.
Well, space tourism, it is becoming a bigger thing, you know, and hey, it's amazing that we live in an age where that's even possible, but it's not possible for me. Okay. I don't think I'll ever acquire enough wealth to where I can say, you know what? I mean, listen, I'll be honest. Going down to Cancun, that cost me a fucking arm and a leg. Do you know what I mean? My wife was always going on, can we not fly premium economy or business? I'm like, fuck no. Do you know how expensive these flights are? Going to space, I don't think will ever be on my agenda. I don't know about you, Smith.
No, I don't ever think my bank account's never gonna show a receipt.
Hey, this isn't a knock on the UFC pay structure, by the way. No, do you know what I mean?
No,
but most people.
I mean, there's a handful of people on the planet that can afford to do that. I don't think I'd go if I could, though. I don't think I would go.
Ooh. See, that's a good one. Harrington, yes.
Well, so here's the thing. You are right. Right now, it costs, like, if you want to go up to the International Space Station or to some of these proposed luxury hotels in space, you're looking at anywhere between, like, $19 to $50 million for, like, a week-long trip. But there is, you know, there's suborbital flights, right, where you can just, you know, take a plane essentially into space, get like the view of what space is like and come back down. Right now, those are going for about $450,000, but they are saying it projecting down the line, they could get as low as $20,000, $10,000, maybe even $5,000 for a short trip into space.
See, that's pretty awesome. You know, the thing is, going to space, to your point, go to like the International Space Station or a luxury hotel. I didn't even know there was a luxury hotel thing in space. Neither that's wild.
Well, there isn't yet. They're building it for space tourism. They're building a hotel in space specifically for people to spend $100 million to come up for, you know, a month to live in this beautiful hotel overlooking the Earth.
See, going up to that, I would. But just going up into orbit and then coming back down, no. That doesn't appeal to me. I remember years ago, I was at a UFC event in London and there were some guys sitting next to us and they were guests of Lorenzo Fertitta. And you could tell they were very well off by the way they were dressed and just how they carried themselves, and they're guests of Lorenzo, so I'm sure they're not scrubs. And they ran Virgin Galactic. I remember at the time, when me and my mate were like, holy fuck, Virgin Galactic. They're sending people into space. And that was at 2013, but now we're actually doing it. Why wouldn't you go into space, Anthony?
Man, I don't even like flying that much.
You get a little nervous?
No, I don't get too nervous. I just always assume, like, I've worked in construction, I've worked on vehicles and farming, and like, there's always one idiot that you know didn't do his goddamn job. In every job I've ever had. So, like, I'm always afraid it's going to be like the plane mechanic or the guy that aired the tires up or something. Like, I don't know. It just always, I'm always expecting that there's at least one idiot out there that didn't do his job at some point in time.
That is the mentality that I have when I go to the local fair, you know, with the carnies. Mm-hmm. I'm like, there's no way I'm putting my kids in these shitty little things. You know what I mean? Because one of those gypsies over there definitely hasn't done the checks and definitely hasn't tightened everything and he's not paying attention. That is that. I would assume if you're working for SpaceX or anything like that, they hire a better quality individual than the local fair, though. One would think. Yeah, do you know what I mean? He rocks up, he's got a fucking curled up cigarette behind his ear, ripped jeans, and he's covered in oil. You know?
I don't let my kids ride those rides ever for that exact same. Like, that idiot can't even brush his teeth and take a shower. He's not doing any safety checks. That's for
correct.
Sure.
Correct. Exactly. But yeah, space. I would go. I'd go to one of the hotels, but going up and coming down. Before we move on, did you ever see Jeff Bezos when he went up with William Shatner from Star Trek?
I did see that.
Oh my God. Jeff Bezos, and I shouldn't say this because he's a very powerful man, but is he the cringiest motherfucker on the planet?
It's getting worse too.
Yeah, it's like, listen, I get it. You're the rich. Well, he's the second richest man now. I think Elon Musk surpassed him. You're the richest man on the planet. You can do whatever you want. You can say whatever you want, but just shows you can't buy fucking cool because he is the biggest dork you've ever met.
Well, and I would hang out with Elon Musk way before I would hang out with Jeff Bezos. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that says a lot.
Elon Musk seems pretty cool. If not cool. He's very interesting. He's a little weird. Definitely stares off into the distance a lot. You know what I mean? I think he's definitely like borderline autistic or something.
He seems like obviously I've never met him, but he seems like a different type of guy. It seems like Jeff Bezos over time is getting way douchier.
Because he got divorced, didn't he? I saw a picture of him.
Yeah, so now he's all cool and ripped. Yeah.
Well, Brian, you were saying that before. I mean, look, fucking Vin Diesel, there he is again.
Dude is for sure on juice right now. I mean, he was like scrawny 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Look at him.
Man. But so what? Listen, you're right. I mean, that man can afford the steroids that Jeff Bezos can afford would put Vito Belfort's doctor to shame. Okay. That is an absolute fact. And God bless him. All he's doing is selling books and Amazon and fucking running the entire world and going up to space. If he wants to do steroids, God bless him. He's not hurting anyone. He's not competing in a cage.
Yeah, and I'm probably just being a hater too. Like,
me too.
He's just so goddamn rich, and maybe I'm just jealous. Maybe that's why I think he's looking.
And he looks good as well. He looks good there.
Yeah, how old is he?
I have no idea. Got to be in his 50s. Brian Harrington, what have you got for us on Jeff Bezos? Immediate knowledge, please. Nothing.
They don't care about
him. He is a 57-year-old man. He was divorced from his wife, Mackenzie, and he is now just living the dope bachelor lifestyle.
Hey, and God bless that man. God bless that man. You know what I mean? You can't fucking hate on that. All right, what else have we got, Harrington? I believe there was something about some scammer or something to do with a dash cam or something.
Yeah, so this is the best argument I've seen for having a dash cam on your car. There are people who are currently scamming right now. They will, you know, just pull up into traffic and then pull all kind of shenanigans to try and, you know, get some kind of insurance scam going. So I think it's in Russia, every car is required to have a dash cam in it. So you do get a ton of like fun footage like this.
Let's take a look. By the way, insurance fraud is nothing new. You know what I mean? People are doing that. That is a tale as old as time. We got the video.
What the hell?
Oh, come on.
Oh my God.
What in the world?
Hold on, that's not Russia. That's England. I just by the houses. Just back that up a touch, Brian, because you could hear them talking. Who said it was Russia?
What the hell? You idiot! Oh my God! Oh my God!
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, no, that's an English accent for sure, and I can tell by the houses. They look like some nice former council semi-detached houses. Yeah, people try that shit all the time, but that was so blatant. I mean, that was terrible.
I've actually thought about that dash cam thing before. I would just feel like, I don't know, I just feel like a nerd having a dash cam in my car. But as a guy who can't mention any names, dates, companies, or individuals, who's been sued a handful of times over
stupid shit. You both, buddy.
Yeah, we've had these conversations before. People just want money for not shit, for doing nothing. You know, like whether you're guilty or not guilty, depending on who you are, sometimes it's easier to settle and, you know, go along your business. It's cheaper that way sometimes. So dash cams would help that shit. You know, it's probably not hard for people in your area to spot Michael Bisping's vehicle driving down the road. You know what I mean? That's probably, if I was going to throw myself out in front of a vehicle, it'd probably be Michael Bisping's if I could.
Well, listen, I've never had anything as blatant as that. And by the way, mine's a very nondescript, just Audi. You wouldn't know. It's nothing fancy, nothing flash. But
what happened to the Maserati?
I used to.
Didn't you have a white
Maserati? Champ. Man, come on.
Yeah.
I got rid of that a long time ago. Do you know what I mean? Okay. Just a nice Audi A6 supercharge. You know what I mean? It's very nice, very fast. You know. Just
under the radar.
Under the radar. Understated sophistication. You know?
I like that.
Oh.
I like that. Okay.
No. I pulled into a garage one day, and to be fair, I've only got one eye. I was looking the wrong side and I didn't see. And I didn't come to a halt as quick as I should have done. And I just touched this car in front, and this old lady gets out And she was a fucking battle axe. She was calling me every name under the sun and all the rest of it. And I said, well, there's no damage. And there was zero damage. But then she started like pointing at other things on the car. She was pointing at like a dent on the side. And she said, well, you've obviously caused that. The way it's hit it, the energy's moved through and it's caused that dent. And I'm like, no. No, it didn't. Okay, I get it. I know the shock waves or whatever. I understand what you're saying, but that didn't happen. I was hardly moving. And then she was a psycho. She was getting in my face and it looked like she was going to hit me. I swear to God, my wife was with me. She was a psycho. So I said, right, that's it. I'm leaving. And I got in the car and I drove off and I went straight to the police station though, because I thought, I got to report this. You know what I mean? So I went into, because otherwise there's cameras at a gas station.
Hit and run or whatever.
It's a hit and run. And then she's looking for money anyway. And now I'm fucked. So I went straight to the police station. I said, I went in. I said, hey, listen, I'm just here to report that I touched the car. There was no damage, but the woman was crazy. She was getting in my face and I left because I felt she was going to assault me. But I just thought I'd give you the details here in case she reports a crime. And anyway, heard nothing about it. Thank God.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
So they have dash cams in almost every car in like China because people do this shit all the time. And
yeah, my dad.
What else is crazy in China? If you hit somebody, you're responsible for their medical bills for like the rest of their lives if they get injured.
So really?
So people will just back over you if they hit you. It's like because there's
hold on, hold on.
Because it's cheaper.
It's cheaper. There's like a $70,000 fine for hitting for like running somebody over with your car, whereas it could cost you like $500,000 to pay for somebody's medical shit. It's wild. It's wild shit.
No, it
but
is.
That's so if they hit you, they'll back up and make sure they kill you.
Oh, yeah. That's why.
Oh, so that's what you meant when you said they will back up. They will kill you.
Yeah, they'll hit you.
That's a very generalization. You know, that's a big comment to make for, what is it, 1.4 billion people.
I'm not saying
every
they
single
do it.
Person. That's borderline racist, okay? I'm
going to
give you the side.
Way more in China than it does in America for different fucking reasons.
Bring up the facts. Google number of hit and runs, because there's a lot of hit and runs out here in this country. I'm not talking shit about your system, but I will say this. Fucking this drives me crazy. I'll drive along. There is a green arrow, meaning I can turn right, but there's also people crossing the road at the same time. Now, fortunately, I see them. Okay, because my one eye does work, and I stop. But I turn the news on every day, there's hit and runs. And in a dark area at night with no streetlights, I can see why these hit and runs happen. I'm just saying, it seems silly.
The process with the green turning arrow and pedestrians getting the white little walking light to be able to cross never made any sense to me.
It's insane. Why did they do that? Cars can go, people can go, you know, but we'll just let you govern it by yourself. Well, why do you need fucking traffic lights in the first place then? If we're all just fucking, you know, if we're all just doing our own thing and judging it, we're fine. I can make it through there. She's walking slow. She's walking slow. I'll just go through. Brian, we got any facts? Any stats?
682,000 reported hit and runs on average in the U.S.
Right. And that, go on. So that 682,000 in the US. Holy shit. Just look up the UK because we've got to be balanced. But saying that, we've got a way smaller population. That's not fair. Do China.
China.
How many hit and runs reported in China? I am intrigued to know this. And how many people.
Have you ever seen those videos? And I don't know where they're from, but it's just a absolute, like hundreds of cars making their way through an intersection at the same time, but there's no lights, there's no stop signs.
What, in India?
And they just seamlessly seem to figure it out. I've never understood that.
Roundabouts. That's what it is. Roundabouts are awesome. People say that you just govern the traffic yourself and you just drive and it's a lovely system. You just stop, you give way to your right. If there's nothing there, you go. It's super
I was in
easy.
Dublin one time and I could not believe at the amount of roundabouts that there was in Dublin. Is that a European thing?
Yeah, roundabouts should make their way over to America. Listen, I know it's a great country. I love living here. It's a land of opportunity, okay? But just get yourself some fucking roundabouts. But for me to get to the freeway, I've got to stop at about 20 traffic lights. I'm just going to tell you, Anaheim Hills is not a buzzing metropolis. There's not a lot of traffic. There's not a lot of people. But I have to stop at lights, and there's nothing fucking there. Anyway, All right, let's just real quick take a quick second to hear from BetterHelp. BetterHelp offers professional counseling, which is done securely online. So if you feel like there's something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals, definitely check out BetterHelp. Listen, in 2021, there's never really been a bigger spotlight on mental health, you know, and that's such a great thing because, you know, people, there's still a stigma about talking about your mental health, but honestly, there's most people have something going on, something that's holding them back, that little bit of doubt, that self-dialogue, you know, that creeps in here and there, and it stops them from being the best person that they can possibly be. You know, I mean, I've talked about it at length. I went and spoke to somebody about my anger. Maybe going to re-up with those guys again soon because I want to kill Harrington here and there. But still, it really, really does help. So whatever you are dealing with, BetterHelp has a wide range of counselors who are available for you. Plus, it is more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid, is available. And it's easy to get started. Once you sign up, BetterHelp will match you with your own licensed professional therapist who you will be able to communicate with in just under 48 hours. It is not a crisis line. It is not self-help. This is professional counseling done securely online. And BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matchups. So it's easy and it's free to switch counselors if needed. Listen, take advantage of this, okay? We have a tremendous offer for you. If there's something that's troubling you, if you've got something on your mind, I'm telling you, speaking to somebody will make it all the better. New testimonials are posted daily from users. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they are now recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. Give it a try. Go to betterhelp.com/believe. That is better, H-E-L-P. I can't even speak. I need to speak to someone to help me with that. Betterhelp.com/believe. You're going to get 10% off your first order. One more time, betterhelp.com/believe for 10% off your first order. And starting 2022 with the help that you need with BetterHelp. My God, what's going on? It's going to be a long day. All right, let's get back into it. Talking of dying and things like that, I did, when I went on Twitter and I said the great Anthony Lionheart Smith would be joining us, any questions for him? There was a few questions. We do have people that have sent in a video question for you, I believe. We'll get to that at the end. I believe so, at the end of the show. I haven't seen it. I don't know what it's like. I don't know if it's suitable. But if you have questions, send them into bympod@gmail.com. But got a couple here for you, Anthony. How does Anthony feel about Scott Frost's future at Nebraska? I don't know what that means or what language.
Oh, it's a disaster. That's Scott Frost is the college football coach here in Nebraska,
okay,
at the University of Nebraska. And our football program right now is very disappointing, but I'm still here supporting. I'm not going anywhere. And I still believe in Scott Frost.
We're going to move on. It's college football. Couldn't give a fuck. How does he feel about Brian Campbell from Morning Combat? He will know what I mean. I have no idea. No context. I'm not being a shit stirrer.
Do you know who Brian Campbell is?
He's Luke Thomas's partner, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So
what did he say?
For whatever reason, that guy fucking hates me. I've never done anything to him. I've always been nothing but I've only been around him a couple times in person, but he absolutely fucking hates me. And it's just anytime I fight, Luke has always been he's always been very fair in his breakdowns and his analysis. I know a lot of fighters don't like Luke Thomas because he'll be honest and he'll say, I don't think he's good here. I think he has some discrepancies here or whatever. I don't ever take that stuff to heart. He's always given me a fair breakdown and a fair shake. It's not always been super positive, but you know what? My career hasn't always been super positive. That's my fault. But Brian Campbell just shits on me any chance he gets. Just I'm trash. I'm washed up. I'm getting too old. Yeah.
Well, fuck Brian Campbell then.
And then I run into him and he's perfectly polite. Yeah. It's like no issue at all.
I had the same thing with John Anik. I swear to God, when I lived back in England, and there was what was it called? ESPN something. MMA Tonight, I think it was called, on ESPN a long time ago. John Anik was the host. And granted, that was back in the day when I was a little bit more controversial than what I am now. And I used to be a loudmouth bastard. But John Anik would never say anything nice. And I hated him. I hated the guy. I'm like, this son of a bitch. When I see him in person, I'm going to confront him. I'm going to have a serious word. There was some serious finger wagging going on. But then you get to meet him. And he's literally the nicest guy you could ever meet. And when we had John Anik on the podcast, I started off with that, and we all had a good laugh, hard. It was water under the bridge.
Yeah, I've never taken it personal, but Luke makes fun of him on the show about it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So like, right, okay. Luke flips him a lot of shit about it.
And then last one before we move on. In fact, I got one more for you from me. Did the home invader, in hindsight, affect your performance against Glover Teixeira?
Man, I would never, especially publicly, I'd never come up with any excuse for a loss.
That's why they love you.
Yeah, I would never do that. Glover beat me fair and square.
No, he did. His
ass came through.
But I mean, what was... Because for those that don't know, there was a guy came in the middle of the night. If you've watched this show, then you're probably up to speed with everything MMA. The home intruder, though, I mean, what was the aftermath of that? I mean, were you a little bit more apprehensive at night? Was your wife a little more worried? Did you have to up the security? I mean, talk to me about that kind of thing.
Yeah, we had a really tight-knit neighborhood. I live in a suburb of Omaha, so I'm not even in the Omaha city limits. It's outside of Omaha, and it's just small. Everyone knows everyone. So like there had been a lot of times I'd left my door unlocked or left my truck unlocked or left the garage door open or whatever. So we were obviously a lot more careful about that. We had a brand new security system. Vivint Smart Home has been a longtime sponsor of mine. They've taken really good care of my security system needs, but I just never used it because I didn't feel the need to.
Sure.
So now, you know, they upgraded it and I use that now. I've always been a gun guy. It's just a Midwest thing. I'm small.
Somebody on Twitter asked about that actually as well. I was trying to find it. They asked about your guns and did you buy anything special since?
I have plenty. I usually sleep with a gun within reach of me somewhere. Like
what kind of gun?
A pistol, just a handgun. It's just
a handgun.
Just a handgun, and I'm from the Midwest. They're everywhere. They're all over my house. So
I know.
He was just
I'm British, as you know. But so it's I still struggle with it, and I'm not trying to get into the whole gun debate. That's not what I'm doing here. You know what I mean? I know people are very passionate about the guns.
Well, it's very different, right?
Like it's just a different culture.
It's not weird for me. Like as a kid when I grew up, it's just not weird for like we'd shoot guns on the weekends with our uncles and grandpas and grandmas. It's very normal, at least here in the Midwest. Some would say it was lucky that I didn't that night. It was probably one of the only nights in probably a year that I hadn't been there. Because I would have shot him for sure.
Yeah.
100%. But, lucky for him and probably lucky for me and my family, I didn't.
Yeah. Because you ever got to live with that. Yeah. You know what I mean? Of course, if you had shot him and rightly so, I mean, I guess he had a home intruder. You don't know what he was trying to do and what that harm would have came to you guys.
Right.
Knowing
he wasn't, like, I would have shot him because I wouldn't have known if he was armed. I would have never known what he wanted or any of that stuff.
Well, at least now you haven't got someone's life.
Yeah.
Justified or not.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Some young idiot kid tripping his balls off on drugs, and he wasn't armed. He was only there a couple minutes or a couple seconds before I heard him. And he got off pretty much scot-free, to be honest.
Did he really?
Yeah. Again, I don't want to get too controversial, but Nebraska has this like mental health kind of rehabilitation thing with these probation programs. So he was, diagnosed with some sort of mental disorder or mental issues that he has. So now he's on some long-term probation. You know, if he violates it, he goes to prison, but as long as he stays straight and narrow, he'll be good and they'll wipe it. But he's already been arrested since then.
Of course he has. You know, my brother Conrad had a pickaxe stuck in his head, and the guy that did it, when he was in the army, Conrad has, a bunch of issues and whatnot. But the guy that did it, when it went to court, his defense was that his IQ was so low that he didn't realize that by putting a pickaxe in someone's head, you could kill them. Okay. And he got off. It worked. It worked.
That's insane.
Yeah. But the point of the story is to your point, this fucking dickhead that did it ended up wrapping a traffic sign around some poor girl's head. And he ended up going to prison for that for a long, long time. The guy was just a piece of shit. You know what I'm saying? Just a screw loose. Anyway, lovely, upbeat, happy January 2022 conversation that we're having. Harrington, let's shift gears. Come on here, sir. There's a lovely Devil's Avocado shirt you got on there, by the way. BYMmerch.com if anybody wants to buy them. We are going to get some new designs out. But Harrington, we're going to shift gears. We're going to talk all things MMA/UFC because don't ask me about the undercard of Bellator because I haven't seen anything on there recently. But what do we have? What is going on? What is popping? What are the big stories? Tee us up.
Well, it's funny. I feel like you guys actually went into this last week when you were having a conversation with Jesse. Max Holloway had to bow out of his fight at UFC 272, aggravated an injury in training camp just 2 days after signing the contract. You guys asked the question on that show, if not Max Holloway, who gets this shot? Well, that's what the UFC has to figure out right now, because Alexander Volkanovski still wants on that card.
Anthony, I'll let you go first.
Man, I don't know. I was so disappointed. It was hard to even. I really, really wanted to see that fight again, which is odd when they keep calling it a trilogy. But like Volkanovski's won the first two, and it's like he doesn't ever get credit for it, whether you believe he won it or not. You know, there's a lot of controversy with the judges scoring there. Who's he been? He's been talking with. I seen him on Twitter talking back.
Here are the front runners from my perspective. Korean Zombie, which, right, by the way, Volkanovski tweeted, let's do it. So that would assume that it's a front runner.
Right.
And then Triple C, Quadruple C, he's come out of the woodwork and he's been tweeting at Dana and whatnot. There's Josh Emmett, ranked number 6. Korean Zombie, did I mention him already? Zombie, Josh Emmett, Quadruple C. And then Yair Rodriguez, even though he's coming off a loss, it was Fight of the Year contender against Max Holloway.
I know typically they don't like to put guys in coming off of losses. I think the Yair fight's interesting. That was a really, I mean, he was right there with Max a lot of the way.
What a fight.
I think if you want to throw someone in that's going to sell really well and kind of be inconsequential, I wouldn't mind seeing Henry Cejudo get in there.
Yeah.
Like it's going to be fun to watch. It's going to be interesting. I don't suspect Henry Cejudo is going to, I mean, Volkanovski is a goddamn monster. He's so big. He's going to be hard to take down. I think that'd be a fun fight, but I think if we're just going to follow the rules of MMA, I would suspect it'd be the Korean Zombie.
It probably is. But you know what? I would like to see, if it was me, I'd probably give it to Henry Cejudo, just because I don't know, just for the fun factor. And I think a lot of fans, you know, a lot of casual people, not casual because Cejudo's not that big of a star where he crosses over, but he is certainly a well-known name in the MMA community. So I think that there's a fun element to it there. That'd be good. I would favor Volkanovski in that fight. I mean, this is bloody weight classes for a reason. And Volkanovski's a beast. Josh Emmett, though, I would fucking love to see that fight. Josh Emmett bangs like a motherfucker. He's a great fighter. He's a solid guy. He's got great wrestling as well. I'm telling you, I think, no disrespect to any of the others, but that'd be a challenging fight, and it'd be a fresh challenge for Volkanovski. There's something about the Josh Emmett fight that I like.
I think it's the style matchup. I think Volkanovski, other than, you know, Max Holloway, he's gonna do kind of what he does. He's a bully. He's strong. He's just physically superior to most of the guys he's going to be in there with. And I don't think you can say that with a guy like Josh Emmett. I had Josh Emmett on my show after his fight, and it was the first time I'd ever talked to him, and I was really shocked. Not that I thought he was an idiot, but he's very, very smart. And he's very well spoken. I wish I left that conversation wishing that more people got to have the experience that I just had with him. You know, for 20 minutes on my show, he was a lot of fun to talk to, and he's very, very smart. He's got a really good mind for the sport. So, I did leave that conversation excited for what he had in front of him, because he's a really tough out and a hard guy to figure out.
And that's your show on SiriusXM, right?
Yeah.
No. Same with me. When we do the fighter interviews on a Wednesday, when you speak to him, he's very articulate. You know, I mean, when you look at him, he looks the part. He looks the part of a quote unquote cage fighter. Do you know what I mean? He's ripped. He's big. He's stocky. He's got a bald head. Nothing wrong with having a bald head, by the way. I just had one for many years. No, but you know what I mean? And you see the way that he fights. He's an absolute animal in there. He fights tooth and nail. But then, as you say, when you speak to him, he's kind of softly spoken, and he's very articulate, and he clearly knows what he's doing. It is surprising.
He's a thinker. It was fun to kind of listen to him. Even he was critical of himself, which is, it's a big sign of maturity kind of in this day and age. You don't see a lot of people that are willing to kind of be critical of themselves in the media and in interviews, and he was very clear about where he thought he could have done better. He was very honest that he didn't pull the trigger, that he didn't take as many risks as he typically does. Beat a
Which
really
fight
tough
is
fight.
That you're referring to?
Ige fight.
Yeah.
You know, he had a long layoff too. He has had some problems with injuries. You can look at that on two different ways. You know, that could be, you know, he is getting banged up, but at the same time, he's not running out there four times a year, you know, taking a lot of damage either. I'm excited for that guy's career.
Yeah, yeah, no, me too. And I love watching him fight. He's a lot of fun. Harrington.
Yes, sir.
Tears up, bud. What have we got?
I was just going to say, before we move on from that, there's one other fighter who's throwing his hat in the ring, and he's fighting this weekend. Giga Chikadze says that, you know, with an impressive win this weekend, he is 100% ready to step in for the title in March.
Well, I mean, that's a sensational fight this weekend anyway against Kelvin Kattar. I mean, I cannot wait for that one. We're both working that one this weekend. So great fight to start the year. It's just hard for the UFC to do that because, of course, I mean, it's only a week, you know, but the fight is, when's the fight? What's the day? Oh, it's not until February 12th, I believe, right? So it's a bit of time, yeah. but you just don't know how much stuff
goes into title fights and the preparation and the marketing and the,
exactly.
I mean, how many film crews are going to have to be flying out the very next day. I mean, there's a lot of stuff I think that the viewers and stuff at home don't understand. It's a goddamn process, that's for
it's
sure.
It's a process. It's a machine. There's so much goes into it. And then you've also got the possibility. I mean, of course, he's saying if he gets through that fight, okay. But, you know, there's a good potential that he's a little bit injured or whatever. Yeah. Anyway, all right, Harrington, moving on.
Sorry, I was just looking for the date of the fight. I got a little distracted.
I'm assuming it's February 12th, right?
The one I was seeing was March 5th, but I'm not. 272 is March 5th.
March 5th. Well, that's. Oh yeah, that's it was March 5th. No, you're right. Well, that's plenty of time. Actually, yeah. He could do that. So, all right, that's a viable option. To be fair.
All right. This one is super interesting. It looks like it has been booked. Not 100% confirmed. I'll check that now. But it seems like it's all but done deal. Derek Lewis going to be fighting on a pay-per-view in Houston against Tai Tuivasa. Big step up in competition. Number 8 fighting number 3. And then I don't know if you saw this week, he had a quote about, you know, fighting in Houston, talking about the pressure of fighting for a title in his hometown.
And then he takes a fight in his hometown.
Yeah, no, see, that's the thing. I mean, we've talked about this before, and I'm sure you have on your show. When he walked out in Houston against Cyril Garn, you could see the look in his eye. He was not himself, and I said that straight away. He, very honestly, when he fought Chris Dawkins last time out, he said, he admitted the whole thing got to me. Obviously came out, destroyed Chris Dawkins in the first round. Typical Derek Lewis performance. Great work. Very likable guy. Who doesn't like that guy? He's awesome. He's also letting us all know about people dying in Brazil on his Instagram. He's the number one place to go for news. But yeah, his next fight now against Tai Tuivasa is back in Houston. You know what I mean? So, like, he's going to have to work with he's going to have to do a lot of visualization at the very least, potentially work with a sports psychologist. Have you ever fought at home, Anthony? I mean, Nebraska.
Not in the UFC.
Oh, really?
I was supposed to main event a Nebraska event like 30 minutes from my house, and then the pandemic shut the whole goddamn world down.
So there was going to be a UFC event in Nebraska.
Yeah, that's where I was initially supposed to fight Glover, and then they ended up moving it to Florida. So yeah. I lost out on that. But, you know, I fought in, you know, like some decent sized regional shows. You know, at home, and I've never had any issue with it, but I'm sure that the kind of UFC, so I fought at home a bunch, but I would imagine being
forgive my
different.
Ignorance on Nebraska, but where is it geographically on the map? I'm British. A lot of people listeners, we have listeners in Uganda. You know what I mean? We are truly international. Okay. Oh yeah. We're big in Uganda.
We're fancy.
The whole, but Nebraska,
right in the middle of the country.
Slap bang.
Smack right in the middle of the country. Like if you put
Kansas, near to Kansas.
Yeah, we're connected to Kansas.
So yeah, that's what I thought. So Wichita, did you fight on that card?
No, I didn't.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, so the closest I fought.
Boom. There it is, Brian. Good job.
The closest I fought in the UFC is Kansas City, Missouri, which is a couple hours away. That's where James Krause lives.
Is there a lot of hurricanes and tornadoes out there?
No hurricanes, lots of tornadoes though.
Yeah.
We're like right in Tornado Alley.
Yeah. Sounds terrifying. Do you see those ones? Where was it? Where was it? Hold on. Was it Oklahoma? No, where was it recently?
Yeah, it was the Poirier Oliveira card. It was that night before, I think.
There was one just recently, like 100 tornadoes tore through somewhere.
Oh, shit.
Brian, you must know about this. It was like a few weeks ago now. And the devastation was just absolutely insane. Again, very depressing episode of the podcast.
Right.
Harrington, Brian, no one's going to help me out here.
There a 100 feared dead of tornadoes tear through several U.S. states. This was in December, and it was throughout the whole Midwest and the South.
Yeah,
did some come through Nebraska?
I will check that right now.
Yeah, we had these real crazy storms.
Have you ever experienced a tornado?
Oh yeah.
I saw a video on Instagram yesterday of somebody running into the tornado, and then
this is how dumb we were when we were growing up.
This is what I want to hear.
If there was a tornado warning and we wanted to go see something crazy, once it's pouring rain and the wind is nuts, we just grab like a 6-pack of beer each and we just go cruise around the country road so we could hope we could see one.
I think I would total do the same idiots. Thing yeah, when you're younger idiots. When you're younger
wouldn't do that now. I slept I was a kid and I was with my uncle one time in the living room. They had this, huge house, and him and I were watching a movie and I fell asleep and a tornado came right through the city, and like sucked half the water out of the pool in the backyard, and me and him slept right through it.
Wow. It's fucking terrifying, isn't it? It really is. I want to get your take on this, but I also want Harrington to explain this moving, changing gears from, again, people dying. Harrington, number three, Rakic and Felder. Alexander Rakic came friend of the show. Paul Felder, friend of the show. Both friends of mine got into it over Rakic throwing another commentator under the bus. And Paul thought it was aimed at him for some reason. And it all started from a Bisping tweet. And I'm reading that out. That's not me talking about myself in third person. Heaven forbid.
Yeah, so you said you were working the ESPN desk. People were asking you about it. So Alexander Rakic took the opportunity to quote tweet. He said, "If it's you, John Anik, and Dominic Cruz working, I'll definitely watch the fights without having to mute them. #facts." Paul Felder jumped on and said, "Just say what you got to say. Is this a third grade crush? Tell me you don't like my commentary, and I'll tell you some of your fights suck." Rakic responded, "I listen to you all day, but go on, speak your mind." Felder, again, jumps on the offensive. "I'm nothing but respectful of you. Called a few of your fights. I don't recall saying something negative about a line. Best of luck. Couldn't help but feel slighted about your tweet, but best of luck." Rakic says, "I don't know why you think that was a shot at you, Irish Dragon. Are you commentating that card with Bisping? If so, I look forward to hearing your analysis. I always enjoy. I also... like how you do the post-fight interviews. Much respect."
So Rakic
sounds like they're just making out.
Bad to say about anybody. Paul Felder, because I listen, Paul's great. Paul's awesome, but Paul's kind of like me as well. Do you know what I mean? Little, the Irish Dragon, the Irish bits in there, the craziness. I've dealt with it, Paul Felder, at 4 o'clock in the morning with too much whiskey in his system. Do you know what I mean? I've been there. I've had him nose to nose. He's a great guy. I'm not saying he's like Dominic Cruz, so he just jumped to the wrong conclusion, and Rakic had nothing but good things to say by the sounds of it.
Yeah, I was like, as he was reading it, I was like, sounds like they both are not, they're arguing about not arguing.
No, you're awesome, bro.
No, you're
that's
better.
That's what I'm saying. You're awesome as well. No, but you're really good at what you do, Harrington.
Well, it's just funny to me that Rakic is clearly taking the shot here, and it could have been at anybody on the commentary team, right? And it's the mystery guy. But for him to jump up and immediately take ownership, it's like, what's going on, Paul Felder?
Hold on. I think Rakic was just, and by the way, oh my God, this is your favorite person in the world. It just dawned on me, Anthony Smith. My bad. But it just dawned on me that he's just having a play on words because Dominic Cruz said that he had to mute it when DC commentates.
That's how I heard it too.
He's just saying, this is great. I definitely won't be muting it.
It sounded like he was kind of taking a shot at Dominic more than anything. Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of people do.
I'm working with him this weekend and he'll be taking shots at me. Every time we commentate, he always says, "We'll play nice today, Bisping." I said, "Good, I'm glad." And then we fucking started last time I did it straight away. You do opening comments. Mm-hmm. He said that, "Can you stand a little bit further away because your breath stinks?" In the opening comments at the top of the fucking show. And I'm like, "Okay, you little motherfucker." Right. Oh, dear. All right. So that's a nothing story then we just discovered.
All right. Well, yeah, I'm a dummy then. My bad.
You're good. All right. Today's episode is sponsored by Blue Chew. You know, the one, you chew it and then you do it. Blue Chew is a unique online service that will give you the same ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, except it's in a chewable form, hence the name Blue Chew. It comes at a fraction of a cost, and you don't need to go see a doctor, okay? You do it all online, okay? It's an online prescription service. You don't have to go sit there, speak to your doctor, and say, hey, listen, I have erectile dysfunction. By the way, this is not for erectile dysfunction. It would help that. This is a performance enhancement for the bedroom, okay? So if you want to blow the socks off your significant other, give this a try. I mean, we all want to get better. You know what I mean? We all want to put in that performance that your significant other is going to remember. And BlueChew.com is the way to do that. Harrington, you've been blowing your partner's socks off for quite some time now.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're about a month out from Valentine's Day here, right? So what I like to do is I like to stock up my Blue Chew once a year, right? Like I get it all, it comes in, right? And I cycle off for like, you know, a couple of weeks, like lead up to the big day, you get the nice prefix dinner. All of a sudden, boom, you got all these Blue Chew tablets lying around. Take two of them and give her the night of her life.
I mean, I don't know. Listen, stick to the medicated dose. Yeah. Whatever it says in there, if it says take two, take two. If it says take one, take one. Listen, Harrington, as we know, listen, he needs all the help he can get. So Harrington, you probably take three or four, let's be honest.
Yeah, I mean, it's resistant. Like, you need to take the Hulk dosage at this point.
Yeah. Anyway, listen, you won't be disappointed. People absolutely love this product. That's why they've been a longtime sponsor of this podcast. So do me a favor. If you're looking at improving in that area, shall we say, then go to BlueChew.com. The promo code is Believe. You're going to get your first month for free. Tremendous offer. You're just going to pay $5 in shipping. BlueChew.com. Sexual enhancement, bedroom performer, Viagra Cialis, same ingredient, half the price. BlueChew.com, promo code Believe. First month for free. All right, where were we? Anthony, you are with us. How does the land lie right now in terms of A, your injury? Because I know you had surgery. How's that healing? Do you have a time frame? And how is the relationship or lack of, for want of a better word, of you and Alexander Rakic? Because yeah, I know you were going back and forth.
Yeah. Him and I have a weird respect for each other. I was very upset about the way that our fight went. And, you know, again, I don't make any excuses, but I don't feel like it was probably ref the way that it maybe should have. I wanted it to be five rounds. It turned to be a three round main event. Wasn't super pumped about that either. I thought five rounds favored me. So he did what he had to do to get the win. But we've never had any real issues. You know, he said some smart ass shit and we talked it out afterwards, and he's been super respectful since then. He hasn't said much, but the things he has said, he's been cool about it. You know, he's very confident that he can kick my ass, and he should be. That's his job. You know, that's not offensive to me. But things are going really well. Finally, it took a long time to kind of start to get my leg back, but physical therapy has been really good. I started training last week. Very, very lightly, like doing jujitsu and just moving around a little bit, but we're getting there, man. I think maybe May, I think I should be able to make it back.
You know, I was going to ask so many things there, but I wanted to ask you this the other day. The last time you fought against Ryan Spann, and we spoke to you about this when you came on the show, you just seemed like a different person. And then I was on a jog this morning and I was thinking you're coming on the show, and I was just, you know, planning stuff in my mind. And I just thought, the Anthony Smith that beat Ryan Spann that night, that guy against John Jones when you had that fight, I feel like that fight would have gone very, very differently. Do you agree? I mean, I'm assuming you'll say yes, but you seem like there was a mental switch. You seemed angrier, but obviously it worked for you. You were definitely more effective. I mean, you took Ryan Spann out of there in style, and he's a tough opponent.
Yeah, I think that I've always said this. I think I've just been a late bloomer. Just in general in my life. So I think I'm just now coming into my prime. I think my mindset's kind of meeting my physical abilities at this point. And I've talked about the mental health part of the game and just how this sport will just fucking tear you to pieces if you let it. And I wasn't dealing with a lot of the stuff. I think just in my own head, I got a great life. I got a fantastic family. Like, my bills are paid. I don't really have a bunch to bitch about, but that doesn't necessarily mean that I don't struggle with some, you know, my own insecurities and dealing with my own problems. So, I just started dealing with that stuff and I stopped trying to feel a certain way. You know, I don't want to be anybody's self-help book here, but I stopped trying to, like, if I started to get angry about something, you know, back when I was younger and was coming up in the game, people would always say, well, you can't fight mad, you'll fight like shit, or you can't let this emotion get a hold of you. And just over time, I figured out that I just go in there feeling how I feel instead of trying to force myself to feel a certain way. You know, it's like you want to recreate something that worked. So one time I was super calm. So now, you know, I don't want myself to think I always need to be calm because that worked that one time. I just allow myself to feel the way that I'm feeling at the time. If I'm nervous, I just let myself be nervous and stop trying to be the fucking tough guy and trying to convince myself that I'm not. Or if I'm a little anxious, or sometimes I'm super, super calm and I just let myself be that way. I stop trying to force shit and just, I just control what I can control. I go bust my ass in the gym. I train my ass off and I show up and give max effort and the rest will figure itself out.
Yeah, no, I'm sure a lot of people listening to that can relate to that and find it very interesting that somebody like yourself or me or whatever, you know, what we do, we're seen as, you know, alpha males and we seem to have it all figured out, you know, but it's still what goes on between the ears controls everything. And to your point, I remember when I first started in the UFC, when I had my first fight in Manchester, I walked out and the crowd was very pro me because it was in Manchester and it all went to my head and I sprinted to the octagon like a madman and I was tried running in the cage with my shoes on and they were like, whoa, Michael, you've still got your fucking hoodie on. You got no mouthpiece in, slow down. Anyway, afterwards that fight, I was like, shit, I was too hyped up. I was too crazy. And for my next fight, I've got to expect the crowd and I've got to be mentally prepared. And I've got to work on being very calm. Do you know what I mean? So mm-hmm. I purposely did that. And I walked out. It was in London. But this time I walked out and it was all calm and goosey-loosey. And I'm fucking waving at people and I'm fucking saying hi to Dana. And then my opponent almost smashed my fucking head in the first round because I'm like, I'm in a fight. So to your point entirely, you can't force it. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, yeah, of course, they say, and I always say I'm a big proponent, you want to try and be calm. But you know what? If that day, if you got that little fucking chip on your shoulder, fuck it, go with it.
Yeah, just ride it in there. And that's helped a lot. I think just, I don't know. I think technically I've just turned a corner. And I think some of that is just physical maturity. I feel like my body's finally leveled out. Like I'm comfortable in my own body now. I was trying to, and that's another thing. Like I was trying to figure out like, how much am I supposed to weigh? Like I was cutting so hard to 185 that my body was so fucked up. You know, sometimes I get through a training camp and I'd be walking around at like 205 on the dot. And then two fights later, I'd be at 230 checking in on Tuesday. So it's like my body wasn't leveling out. So now we finally figured out, like, once it, you know, leveled out, I figured out how much I actually weigh. And like, you know, then I go to fight Jimmy Crute and it's the first fight with fans. You know, I'm about to be on this big pay-per-view. Got to get these abs popping. I got to look sexy. And then I kind of came in a little bit skinny and then figured out like, I'm not nearly as athletic when I'm smaller. So I just carry, I carry my weight a little bit heavier now. And it's just it's just fucking trial and error over here.
it is trial and error. And it was trial and error for me all the way through to my career. I didn't win it the belt until I was 37, but you touched on something there. And again, it's so weird, you know, cause you do think, you know, I mean, cause of course our job is to go out there and win the fight and do everything we can athletically. But that there is that little part of, you know, you get a little self-conscious, you are going to be on TV, you want to look good and all the rest of it. Do you know what I mean? And I think you're saying some really interesting things that I think a lot of people don't realize. You know, we're supposed to be the toughest men and women on the planet, but we still have all those same insecurities that a lot of people go through. We were talking about Alexander Rakic before. I'd be remiss to ask your opinion while we got you, because we had them both on here, Jan Blachowicz and Rakic, recently. They were very cordial to one another. They were very respectful. Of course, as you mentioned before, a healthy competitive spirit. They both think they're going to win. But how do you see that fight going?
I think that this is probably one of the better matchups probably for Jan Blachowicz, like in the, you know, at the top of the division. He's really, I talked about this like almost exclusively leading into the Blachowicz-Izzy fight. Jan Blachowicz is so good at dealing with kick heavy fighters. It's really impressive. Like if you just kind of go back and watch, like he doesn't take that many kicks. People kick at him a lot because of the way he kind of plods forward. But he dealt with the kicks from Adesanya very, very well. It was super impressive. And everyone before that. So Rakic is a really kick heavy guy. He's not much of a boxer. And that's kind of how he started the whole problem with me. He just battered me with two real heavy kicks. And my calf was toast after that. So I don't think he's going to be very successful trying to win the kicking game, and he doesn't like being in boxing range. So Jan Blachowicz is obviously kind of a forward pressure guy, likes to stay in boxing range. I think he deals with the kicks well. I think he's the better wrestler. I short of a, you know, a big knockout, I think that the more technical guy and the guy that has more ways to win is Jan Blachowicz. But, you know, you can't take away the power and just crazy athleticism that Rakic has. And the dude's got bulletproof confidence. He's hard to shake.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a fantastic analysis, by the way. It really was. Yeah, very good. Putting me to shame over here. Big news. BT Sport reported this one. Hamilton, come on, I'll let you do it. But Hamzat Chimaev, Gilbert Burns, give us the lowdown. It's an Instagram post, essentially. You know, it's not legit, but I want to see. But Hamilton, get your fucking airtime.
Well, I mean, you know, here's the thing. It's two guys who've agreed to fight over social media, and the UFC has not yet put out an official press announcement. So how many times have we seen this before and it not come to materialize? But in this case, both guys do seem to be down. It seemed like Khamzat and Gilbert Burns were going back and forth. First, they said May, and then Khamzat countered with, I believe it was April. And,
April 9th, yeah.
Like that will that seems to be the targeted time for the two of them.
You know, I mean, listen, Khamzat has just had an incredible rise, as we know, 4-0, wiped out everybody, took one significant strike, which wasn't really a significant strike. He was just, John Phillips did that as he was getting choked out. That's not a significant strike. Yeah, it doesn't count. It's like you, and by the way, for anybody watching, you know, if somebody's trapped in a submission and like it looks bad, it looks really serious, and then you see a couple of pathetic little punches, you know they're about to tap out because it's desperation. It's like, fuck it, I'm gonna give you one before I go. But Khamzat Gilbert Burns, it makes a lot of sense, you know, unless the UFC have something else in mind, which they might do. They might have a matchup that they were already leaning towards. I think there's a real thirst to see Khamzat back in there, certainly after how he's captured the imagination of everybody, the rise that he's had, how he's dealing with opponents so easily. You know, the rise is absolutely massive. Anytime I talk about Khamzat on my YouTube channel, for example, the numbers are always there. People want to see this guy fight. They want to hear about him. And Gilbert Burns, as we know, title challenger, one of the best in the division, interesting stylistic matchup. You know, and the UFC do have a habit of giving us the fights the fans want to see. How do you feel about this matchup, and what do you think will happen?
I like the matchup a lot. I think as much as he's been super impressive in his striking, I think where Chimaev is probably most dangerous, at least from what I hear from just the horror stories of people that have been in the gym with him, is his grappling and his top pressure. It's really interesting with a guy like Gilbert Burns, who's so dangerous on the ground. I mean, we all know that MMA jiu-jitsu is a little bit different. You know, it's going to be tough. No matter who you are, I mean, you can just, you know, rewind back to Tim Kennedy, Hodger Gracie. Hodger Gracie is probably the greatest jiu-jitsu practitioner to ever walk the planet. And Tim Kennedy had no problems being on the ground.
Tim Kennedy's one of the biggest dickheads that ever walked the planet, correct? That's fair. You were saying.
But anyways, to a guy with good top pressure, that's hard to deal with, right? So it's an interesting matchup. I would like to see Khamzat kind of stuck on his feet for a while, though, because I want to see how good he is.
Alexander Gustafsson, I don't know if you saw the quote.
If Stephen Thompson would have beaten Bilal, that would have been a really interesting matchup to me, just to see him kind of see his striking kind of unfold a little bit, because we haven't got to see a whole lot of anything.
No, but Alexander Gustafsson was saying this week, he did an interview, and he was saying that when Khamzat fights Usman, he said as soon as Khamzat touches his chin, he's going to knock him out. He said he hits so hard. You know, he said he hits harder than heavyweights and all the rest of it. And you've always got to take it with a pinch of salt, because that's obviously Gustafsson being a good teammate. And Gustafsson, you know, he's had his time in the sun now. Do you know what I mean? He was one of the best. He was one of the greats. One of the best guys to never win a championship. And maybe he's going to fight again at heavyweight. You know what I mean? I don't think he knows or the world knows whether or not he's retired or not. But, you know, I think his title aspirations and all the rest of it, that moment's passed by for him. So he's allowing Khamzat to have the shine, and he's being a good teammate. So anytime you see comments like that, you've always got to take it with a pinch of salt.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. It did carry a little more weight with me when he said it, though, just because I've heard, you know, like, other people said it first, so now I can say it out loud. But I've heard the stories of Chimaev for years, like a couple years before he was even in the UFC. I remember hearing his name, some young kid that's ragdolling Aleir Latifi and Gustafsson.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Down in Sweden. And I just, and even when he finally made it to the UFC, beat a couple guys and looked really good, I kept that to myself until other people had told the story, like, hey, man, I've been hearing stories about this kid beating the shit out of those guys for a long time. So,
and then when you see him on the pads as well, I don't know if you follow him on social media. He's never so in a gym. He's always a tennis court or like a garage or a fucking something. So it's somewhere weird. You know what I mean? Maybe that's what we got to start doing, hitting pads on a tennis court. But he looks good. Granted, when you hit him with a pad, man, and you get a good rhythm, it's easy to look good on pads. But still, he looks technical. His shots are thrown well. He brings the shots back to his face to protect himself and all the rest of it. Mm-hmm. He's not a one-trick pony. He's not just a wrestler.
Did you see him in that grappling or wrestling match with Jack Hermanson?
I didn't watch it. I know he beat him, but how was it? What was the general rundown?
Yeah, I mean, he sliced right through him fairly easily, but I was more surprised at the weigh-in picture. He was...
Oh, yeah, no, he looked massive.
Massive compared... And Jack Hermanson's not a small dude.
Yeah.
You know, he's a big middleweight. So just the size difference in that Gilbert Burns fight is really interesting to me.
Gilbert really is.
He's a blown-up 85er. I mean, I don't know even know if he could make it anymore. But he hasn't been a welterweight for very long.
No. All right, Harrington, come on. What have we got? How long have we been going for here? About an hour and 20 minutes. We've got some questions and stuff to get to here, but give us the juicy stuff. Don't give us, I don't know. We've had enough of people dying for one day.
Okay. Well, how about this one? I don't know. All right. Gregor Gillespie. Says he's been turned down multiple times by Tony Ferguson and he can't figure out why. He's got a 7-1 UFC record with six finishes in his career. What's that?
Because he's a fucking nightmare to fight with his wrestling, but sorry, continue.
Yeah, so I mean that was his big point. He said, I'm not really sure what the issue is, why Tony wouldn't want to fight me. I'm 14-1, I got 12 finishes. I only have one fight in the UFC that wasn't a finish. You could probably expect with a fight like me and Tony, you're probably getting an extra $50,000. Should be fireworks kind of fight. I really don't see the downside fighting me. It's really, really frustrating.
Well, I see the downside.
Lots of downsides.
Yeah, I see lots of downsides. Number one, he's a really tough opponent for anybody. You know, just because Kevin Lee had kicked him into unconsciousness, everybody gets caught. And that was a beautiful kick. Stylistically, he's a nightmare for people because he's wrestling so good. But on the flip side, Tony Ferguson, right? Tony wants big fights. Tony's a fan favorite. Yes, okay, he lost his last three. I was talking about this recently. But if you look at those three people, they haven't aged badly. Oliveira's the champ. Who else was it? Beneil Dariush is in a number one contender fight. And Justin Gaethje is fighting for the belt next. You know what I mean? So there's no shame in any of them. Tony Ferguson's getting to an age now where, he doesn't want to take on. I mean, what's his face? Gillespie ranked probably like 8 or so. He wants the big names. He wants the big fights. He wants fights that are going to put him in title contention. And he wants big, attractive fights. Fights the fans want to see. And of course, Gillespie is a fan favorite and people know him, but he's not one of the big stars in the division. And I think that's Tony's point. He wants those big fights. He wants, he wants people... Fights that are going to be a main event of a fight night or a co-main event of a pay-per-view because Tony's still got that star.
What? That's just a hard fight for no reason.
There you go.
He wants big fights, not just hard fights for no reason. And I totally get that. I echo everything you say. There's a lot of reasons to say no. And I can't. If I'm Tony Ferguson, I can't think of a whole bunch of reasons to say yeah.
Tony was linked with someone recently. Who was it? Harrington, help me out if you know who it was.
Yeah, so Gregor actually pointed this out. He was calling for a fight with Michael Chandler, which Gregor...
Oh, sorry, that's it. Yeah, right. Michael Chandler. They were going back and forth on Twitter. Yeah, see, that's what I'm saying. Right, Chandler, I wouldn't say is an easier fight than Gregor Gillespie, but Chandler is kind of like the sweetheart of 2021. Debut of the year, fight of the year against Justin Gaethje, a tremendously exciting fight. That's why he wants to fight him because he's like, that's a guy I want to put myself up to. Also on the flip side, and I'm not saying this, if you lose to someone like that, it's not as bad because, you know what I mean? There is that little element, that comes into the brain here and there.
For sure. And I think it's easier to request a larger paycheck with a guy like Michael Chandler versus a guy versus Gregor Gillespie. There's not a lot of upside to asking for a bigger paycheck with Gillespie. They're just not.
Yeah.
And that's
they'll say, no, fuck you. You're on your contract. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, you are on your contract. But sometimes, you know, this is the thing people don't realize. You know, if it's a big fight, you know, you'll get a little bit extra. Do you know what I mean? It often does. And they don't have to do that when your contract is for a certain amount and you get a little fucking, you know, nice little check afterwards that you weren't expecting because it was a big fight and all the rest of it. So there is that as well. So, yeah, very well said. All right, Harrington, anything else before we get some questions? Any burning topics we absolutely have to get to?
I don't know. This one is kind of a sexy one, right? I was saving this for the end. Charles Oliveira, right, says that his weight cut went so well for his last fight. He came into fight week. He said he barely had to focus on cutting weight. He felt like there was an easy 10 pounds of water weight to get rid of, and he could have made 145 for that fight week. He says he's willing to go down to 145. And he says after that, he's also interested possibly going up fighting at 170. Which one would you guys like to see more?
Well, I'll tell you this, 145 didn't really go too well for Charles Oliveira, did it? Mm. I don't have his record in front of me right now, but I think he has 8 stoppages in his UFC run.
Yeah, he's like 8 and 10.
Making 145 just because you can, I just don't think it's a good idea. Hamilton, just look up how many of his losses were at 145. It affects your ability to take a punch. It takes your ability to take a shot, your strength.
10 and 1 at lightweight.
10 and 1 at lightweight. I mean, something that's incredible.
That. Yeah.
And against Usman, I'm not hating on Charles Oliveira. He's a great champion, and it's just amazing to see what he's done. But Usman's the pound for pound number one on the goddamn planet for a reason. You know, I mean, I get it, of course, because you want to do that because he's still the 155 pound champ, and if he goes up to 170. Hoorah, big fight, lots of money, nothing to lose because you're still going to be the champ. Same at 145. But there's a reason, you know, 155 is the optimal weight class for Charles Oliveira. And 15 pounds, well, it's 15 pounds up, 10 pounds down. It's a big jump, you know, 10 pounds, 15 pounds, that's a big difference.
Well, him talking about other weight classes gives me a little pause too, like, man, you're the champion at 155. It's the deepest, most dangerous division in the UFC right now. You should probably just worry about the guys that you got in front of you right now instead of worrying about kind of those other guys. And I'm sure he's trying to make headlines. He's trying to put out kind of some dramatic.
That's what
headlines.
They do.
But, yeah.
That's Tyron fucking Woodley. When he was the champion, we both worked at Fox Sports. He was constantly doing it. Constantly. Because again, he's got nothing to lose and he just looks like a badass stepping up. And I want the toughest matchups and all the rest of it. So who knows? Maybe he's clickbaiting fucking all of us. All right. Well, listen, as I say, if you've ever got any questions for us, bympod@gmail.com, send them in, make them fun, make them interesting, make them exciting, make them entertaining. And without further ado, Brian McKay at B McKay's right on Twitter and Instagram, by the way. What have we got? I believe we got a question for Anthony Smith.
We do, from regular show contributor here, Dallas Singer.
Good old Dallas.
Hey guys, Dallas again. Got a question for Anthony Lionheart Smith. Huge fan of yours inside the cage, also outside the cage. So my question is, when did you realize you wanted to do work at the desk, becoming an analyst? And also, when can we look forward to seeing you cage side calling a fight with Michael Bisping? Let us know.
Nice.
There we go.
All right. Well, thanks for the question. I to be very honest, I had no idea that the desk stuff is what I wanted to do. That was I always thought it was like a cool job. Like I was like watched you guys do it thinking like, God damn, that's really cool. But I didn't ever think that I'd ever be good at it or that they'd even want me. I did an interview, like my first main event actually when I fought Shogun on short notice. I did that, you know, that Wednesday fighter meeting or whatever. It was like Dan Hardy, Lappy was in there, Zach was in there. We were in Hamburg, Germany. And Dan and I just started rapping back and forth with just talking fights. And we realized we've been in there like 15 minutes and never talked about my fight or had anything to do with me. We were just talking about fights in general.
Interesting.
So I think it was Zach decided like, hey guys, this is really great. I wish we had a camera on so we could have recorded all that, but we have to talk about your fight. And so they started adding that to my media schedule. So anytime that I fought, I had a sit down with Dan Hardy added to my media schedule, and him and I just talked about fights and life and martial arts. And that's all we did. It was just like an hour thing that I just did. It was just him and I just talked. and they recorded it, threw it on like the UFC's Facebook or something. And then I was getting close to a title fight, and John Jones was fighting Alexander Gustafsson too. That was the first time I ever worked the desk, was with you. And then that was the one that was supposed to be in Vegas, and then they moved it to LA. So they wanted me, because I was getting close to a title fight, I'd done some stuff with Dan, and then I'd done that stuff with Dan, and then Dan had started bringing me on his SiriusXM show, which is now my SiriusXM show, doing like a, it's called The Lion's Den.
The takeover. Went in nice and peaceful. You're like, I'm just here to help out. You're like, listen, Dan's terrible. Get rid of him.
That's fucked up.
Dan Hardy off. I'm cheaper. I'm kidding.
So yeah. So then Zach reached out and said, hey, you ever think about doing the desk work? And I said, never in my whole life I thought about that, but I would. I didn't know shit about shit. I didn't know how the desk worked. I didn't know anything about broadcasting. I didn't know how to read a format.
It's terrifying at first though, isn't it?
Oh God, it was awful. Yeah. It was so scary. But and then I just started working on it. I mean, that's how it started. It started just, you know,
that's really interesting.
Meeting with Zach.
I never knew that, because I'm trying to think how it came to me. I don't know. Yeah, but it was about 2012, a similar thing. I'd sit at home. Not similar at all. I don't know why I said that, but I'd sit at home and I'd watch it, and I'd go, oh, this is easy. This is easy. Oh, this guy's terrible. I'll do a way better job. I just got to get a shot. And then you get on there, and then you realize, back in Fox in the day, you know, it's a very daunting, intimidating studio. Yeah. You're on the Fox lot. So it just makes it seem like, you know, way more intimidating than what it actually is. It's just sitting with your friends talking about the fights. If you were in a pub or just like we are now, it's easy. But when you're in a studio and there's a million cameras and there's got all the people behind the scenes and the producers and the directors and the cameramen and all the rest of it, and you're there and you're listening and they're like, okay, Michael, we're going to come to you in just a minute. And I'm like, I need to swallow. Have you ever had that where you need to swallow, but you can't swallow? Yeah. For some reason, you can't swallow. I'm like, I can't talk until I can swallow. And then, yes, actually, funny you should mention that. Do you suffer with that as well? Because I still get it just a little bit here and there, but occasionally, for some reason, I get it's like this brain fart where I have to swallow and I can't.
Yeah, if I haven't worked in a while, I'll get that little fuzzy feeling right before we're about to go live when they start cutting down, you know, counting down.
Yeah.
Damn, I haven't done this in like a month. Like, fuck, I hope I remember how. And then you start freaking yourself out. Like, you're afraid you didn't do enough research. Like, and
that's a horrible feeling.
Yeah, I way overdo it. So I'm never underprepared. But for whatever reason, I'm like, oh my God, what if we talk about, I didn't even look that up, you know? And then I start panicking like,
oh,
Jesus, Anthony, calm down. Like, you know exactly what we're going to talk about.
It's a bad feeling if you think you haven't done the research, because, you know, like this week now, I'm commentating Saturday. All week's going to be watching fights, going to their Instagram, doing all that type of thing. But back in the day, I don't fight now. But when I was fighting and I was doing, you know, the desk, it was kind of like a side gig, you know what I mean? Now it is my number one priority. That's what I do for a living, you know. But I used to be not blasé because I was very privileged and happy to do it, but I was also getting shit faced the night before. Do you know what I mean? I was never planning on doing so. And I just have one and then another. I'm like, oh fuck! And then I'm rocking in the morning. I'm like a little bit hungover. I'm like, I've done it again. But fortunately, by the time we went live at 3-4 p.m. in the afternoon, I was fine. I was good to go.
Yeah, it was. Just figuring out the system, and like, I think everyone studies a little different, and there's a lot to be said for working with your friends. But when I first started working the desk, I didn't know anybody. Like I just met you, and Ken Flo was still around, and I didn't know Karen, and I didn't really know anyone that well. So, you know, I didn't know any of the camera guys, or I didn't know Zach, and I didn't know Lappy, and I didn't know RJ, and just everyone that helps you out and kind of helps you not look like a fucking idiot. They're all brand new people to me. So like now that they're, you know, like now those are my friends. I look forward to seeing them when we land, and, you know, like when we're in the back and like, I look forward to going to the dressing room where, you know, we're changing into our suits, 'cause you get to catch up with your buddies and you see Chris and, you know, like that.
You walk in, hey, what's up guys? How we doing? What's up?
Yeah. Yeah. It makes it a lot easier when you're just there with all your friends and it's not as uncomfortable as it used to be.
The travel schedule is beginning again soon. 'Cause I don't know if you got some stuff yet, but I got to go March in London in March, which obviously I'm looking forward to. Nice. Hopefully that still goes ahead. And then the following week, Ohio. See, it probably hasn't changed for you, because you live in Nebraska. Mm-hmm. But for me, living in Orange County, I just jump in the car. on a Friday night. Sometimes on a Saturday morning, I just jump in the car, drive in, and I drive back that night. You know, so I leave in the morning and I'm back at sometimes 10 p.m. Sometimes when the fights finish at 4, I'm home by 7:30. So I guess, so I've got a little spoiled. You know what I mean? But it looks like, you know, I don't know about this Omicron bullshit. Maybe that's going to change things. But the travel schedule, it's coming back. And while, again, I'm not complaining, I love my job and I'm very fortunate and I'm blessed to have it, you know, but I'm like, oh, fuck. Now it's going to go back to Wednesday to Sunday where it used to be one day, you know. But hey, c'est la vie. That's the job we have.
Yeah, I'm kind of looking forward to it. It was, I'll regret saying that once we're back. You know, different cities every single weekend. I'll regret saying that, but I'm kind of looking forward to seeing something different. You know, like,
yeah,
I did hear that we're in a different hotel.
Yes, no, that's right. They're moving us.
They're moving us. So yeah. I'm actually excited about that. It's like you see the same goddamn quarantine in every single goddamn the same front desk dude or lady. It's either the one guy.
I'm not going to go into details here, but there's one or two that I'm not overly keen on. But still, right. There's a miserable dude because the water situation. There's no fucking water in the room. I need water, okay? And I go down and they have these little tiny bottles, don't they? They're like two sips. And I know for a fact, because I've been doing it a long time, the limit of the water bottles at once is four. Okay. Because I've been told, because they're like, you know, they put a few in a bag for you. And I say, oh, can I get some more? They say, well, we can't give you more than four. So, all right, fair enough. I guess four is a good number of water bottles to take. But yeah. I've been down there and I've said, can I get a water? And they give you one. I said, can I get two? They're like, phew. I said, can I get four? That we can't give you four. And I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. What do you mean? I know. No, it's not your water. Why are you being so stingy? Why are you being so cheap? Just give me the four bottles because Sandra's told me the limit is four. Give me my fucking four bottles of water or I am going to riot.
Yeah, I'm ready for a different hotel. I'm ready for the new one. Even in the summer when the, you know, when it was so goddamn hot and we couldn't go anywhere there for a long time, I try to go to that, you know, that dirty ass pool, but the goddamn keys never worked to get into the pool. So we had to go ask the miserable guy that won't give Michael any water to let me into the pool. It was a mess.
Son of a bitch. Hey, Brian, we got any more questions?
I do have one more.
All right, one more, and then we'll let you get a
random question.
And then we'll let you get about your day, Anthony. We'll all go about our lives. But please, Brian, what is this random question? Oh.
What up, Bisping, Harrington, Brian? Welcome to Norway. You see a lot of snow. Yes, bring my daughter from kindergarten.
Nice.
And I have two questions for you. The first question is, what you thought about having a midget division in the UFC? And the second question is, how far do you think a Shaolin monk can go if he competed in the UFC? And if you don't have any series to watch, you need to see Power, all of them, sick show. And have a good day. Blessed.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. First of all, we don't say midget. It's going into the Russian and Dagestani again. Brother, brother, listen to me. We say vertically challenged, okay? We don't say midget. What was his question? A midget division in the UFC? Division. I mean, we've got Henry Cejudo and Dominic Cruz and all the rest of it. I mean, we're almost there, aren't we? Let's be honest.
Yeah, I'm an equal opportunity employer. I'll watch any fights.
Absolutely.
It doesn't matter. But, if it's a 7-Eleven parking lot, I'll stop and watch it.
Oslo, Norway. It tells from the Octagon. All the people of Norway didn't know we had a following there. I'm fucking going to Oslo.
That's pretty cool.
In October. What was the other question? What did he ask?
He asked... How would a Shaolin monk do in the UFC? I don't know shit about monks.
Well, neither do I. Okay, believe it or not. But I know this. It's all bullshit. I'll say that. It's fucking bullshit. If Shaolin monks could do anything good in the UFC, they would have done it by now. All these kung fu masters, I always say at McDojo Life. Do you follow at McDojo Life?
Yeah, yeah.
It's the best. Yeah, it's the best. Right. And these traditional martial arts masters, and it's some big, fat, sweaty dude, you know, and he's got seven guys holding him and they go, and they all fly through the air and stuff. I'm like, I don't know who's worse, the actual bullshit master or these students that go along with it. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like I saw one the other day where he does something and the guy falls out unconscious. Right. It's always the same thing. You see it on these martial arts videos. Anytime somebody goes unconscious. They sit them up, and then like they rub their back, and then like they karate chop their neck, don't they? Every single time. I was like, what is this bullshit stuff? Anyway, Shaolin monks, fucking come at me. Let's go.
With all these bullshit self-defense, like martial arts, self-defense, there's a lot of people in heaven right now wanting their money back.
Oh,
that's
that guy. Have you seen him from the Detroit self-defense thing? The black guy with the mustache with the shit and the guns.
He's going to get people killed.
He's going to get killed.
That too, probably. That shit is not safe.
He is. What is that called?
If someone pulls a gun out, just give them your money. Like, don't
Detroit grab Urban Defense System or something. Yeah. It's called DUST. Like Detroit Urban Self-Defense Training System. Or fuck, I don't know. But he's the biggest. But I can't figure out. Harrington, bring that up. Or Brian.
Is that real or is he faking that?
This is what I mean.
I think it's real, though.
I think it's real. But now, because you've seen him on a lot of pages and a lot of people are sharing it. And now I'm like, hold on. Is he just trolling the fuck out of everybody?
But his facility is, like, he's got like a nice facility. They got uniforms and shit. He'll bring in his employees and they're all wearing matching.
They'll dress like cops.
Yeah. Yeah. And they all dress the same. It's weird. Yeah, if he's faking it, he's dedicated.
He's doing a good job. He's doing a good job. All right. Well, Anthony, that's the end of the show. Thank you, my brother. Thank you for joining us. Oh, here he is. There's our guy.
Grab your wrists. A lot of aggressors do this when you're talking to them. He said, I want trouble.
He's got the facility.
What you do is take your hands and clap just like that. Hold down. So I'm here, you clap, and go like that.
That's a bad video. We need him doing gun defenses, Brian. Get up another one because, all right.
So we teach people how
to create safety safely. Specifically, we teach people how to become their own bodyguards, how to make themselves safe. And we teach psychology, law, and skill in that order so they can have a legal format to protect themselves and their families and others, and also understand psychologically how to create the most.
Yeah, I mean,
this guy's out of his mind.
That same earpiece too, like
the '90s cool. Bluetooth.
You were not cool.
What the fuck? Any dickhead, if they've got a fucking like a pager on their thing or a phone on their belt or a Bluetooth thing here, don't talk to me. Right, yeah. You're a knobhead.
You wear gloves, like mechanics gloves, 24/7. You can't even answer your phone with those.
Let me ask you this: Are you a fingerless glove wearer at the gym?
No.
Harrington, I guarantee.
Like a man.
Harrington and the former co-host of this show, I guarantee, have definitely been hitting up gyms with fingerless fucking gloves on.
Are you?
Anyway, Anthony, that was amazing. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for watching the show and supporting what we do. Harrington and Brian, show yourselves. We're saying goodbye. You can grace the screen.
Sorry, I found a video of a tiny Asian man just like getting the gun around the dust guy and being like, I'd shoot you here. I'd shoot you here.
Do it. I've seen that one. But play it. Let's just see. Let's
just
end
for a good laugh on the way out.
So if they try to back up, wait. So if they try to back up, wait.
Because that's what would happen. You wouldn't just go here. Like you see in martial arts demonstrations where someone throws a punch and they just hold the arm out. Do you know what I mean? That's not how real fights go down.
No.
Anyway, Anthony, you're the man. I'll see you on Saturday. Thank you for joining us. Really appreciate it. And that's the show. Take care, ladies and gentlemen.